This is Free Speech Radio News for Friday, April 8, 2005. From KPFK in LA, I'm Aura Bogado. Mexico's left-leaning mayor faces dubious prosecution that may haul him out of next year's presidential race. Afghan-born Zalmay Khalilzad is named U.S. ambassador to Iraq. We'll take a look at his tenure. And nominee as ambassador to the UN, John Bolton, faces an uphill battle from Democrats. These stories and more after these headlines.
I'm Randy Zimmerman with the headlines for Free Speech Radio News. Pope John Paul II was buried today in the underground crypt where, according to Catholic doctrine, the Apostle Peter is also buried. The 2.5-hour funeral mass was shown live on broadcasts around the world as a sea of 300,000 pilgrims, including global dignitaries, made their way through St. Peter's Square. The city of Rome came to a complete halt due to the millions who flocked there in unprecedented numbers. Vatican officials say they have closed the crypt off to the public, hoping most people will go home. The peace process in Northern Ireland took a step forward this week. However, a paramilitary-style shooting last night puts the process into question. Maeve Conran reports.
Although no one has yet claimed responsibility for the non-fatal shooting of the 28-year-old man, observers fear a resurgence in paramilitary violence will further jeopardize the peace process. The shooting comes just 2 days after Gerry Adams, the leader of Sinn Féin, the main Republican political party in Northern Ireland, appealed to the IRA to abandon violence and rebuild the peace process. Sinn Féin is considered to be the political arm of the Irish Republican Army and has been under pressure in recent months after the IRA's alleged involvement in 2 high-profile crimes. Gerry Adams, who has been criticised for not doing enough to distance his party from the paramilitary organisation, made the appeal for peace during a speech in Belfast on Wednesday. Yesterday, the IRA released a statement saying they will give Adams' appeal due consideration. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Maeve Conran.
An Oregon National Guardsman lost his case to avoid deployment to Afghanistan 4 months after his 8-year enlistment was up. Eduardo de Landeros Thierry reports from KBOO in Portland.
Although attorneys working pro bono in Portland and San Francisco pressed hard in federal court to keep 27-year-old Oregon National Guardsman Emiliano Santiago from being sent to combat in Afghanistan, they lost yesterday in San Francisco. The Ninth U.S. Court rejected an appeal by Santiago attorney David Ettinger. The main objection in his lawsuit is the legality of the federal government's power to bring back an ex-soldier to active duty after that soldier fulfilled an enlistment contract. Attorney Ettinger said they will continue to challenge the federal government. There is a congressional statute giving the president authority to extend enlistment terms, according to government attorneys. But Ettinger says that is not specified in an enlistee's contract, and thus it is illegal. The Oregon National Guard has already resent some 412 reservists after they fulfilled their contract time. Reporting for Free Speech Radio News, I'm Eduardo de Landeros Thierry.
Bush administration officials reject a recommendation by a federal task force to let states decide which program serves Medicaid patients better. Dante Toza reports from Philadelphia.
The Bush administration officials told the state leaders today that they must choose the federal Medicare plan rather than to provide alternatives. Currently, over 30 states offer better prescription drugs program to seniors than the federal system is proposing. The Bush administration's directive also goes against the recommendation of the Federal Commission advising the government on the new Medicare plan. Pennsylvania is one of the few states that already offers a number of drug programs to seniors. It has also one of the highest concentration of seniors right behind Florida. With this order from the Bush administration, just in Pennsylvania alone, over 2 million would stand to lose options and pay more in prescription drugs. And across the country, 40 million are facing the same risk. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Dante Toza in Philadelphia.
Walmart may have to pay a special tax to the state of Maryland to compensate for poor wages. Doug Cunningham has the story from the Workers' Independent News Service.
Versions of the Fair Share Health Care Act have passed both the Maryland House and the Senate, but the bill has not yet made it through both houses. Walmart's low-income workers often qualify for state health care programs. The state wants Walmart to pay those costs. Ann Healy, a Democrat in Maryland's House of Delegates, is chief sponsor of the bill.
Maryland has always been a progressive state. I think this is cutting edge and it's very important.
Opponents of the bill fear Walmart won't locate a big warehouse in Maryland if the state requires Walmart to pay 8% of its payroll for workers' health care.
I don't think we want companies that are unwilling to provide a decent living to the people that they hire. We want companies that are going to maintain the quality of life and the quality of our economy in Maryland.
Healy is confident that a threatened veto by the Republican governor can be overridden. For Free Speech Radio News, Doug Cunningham, Workers Independent News.
This week, the nation's fastest growing union signed up tens of thousands of workers in Illinois. In Chicago, Chris Giovannis has more.
Many of Illinois' 50,000 home child care providers earn less than $10 per child per day, a rate those workers hope to see improve now that they voted to be represented by Local 880 of the Service Employees International Union. The Illinois workers are the biggest group of child care providers in the nation to elect to organize statewide. SEIU's organizing effort was eased last month when Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich signed an executive order giving the workers the right to bargain with the state even though they are not state employees. SEIU has also vowed to fight for health care and other benefits for the workers, who provide care through a state-funded, government-subsidized child care program to more than 200,000 children from moderate and low-income families. This is Chris Giovannis of Chicago Indy Media for Free Speech Radio News.
And I'm Randy Zimmerman for Free Speech Radio News.
The senatorial nomination hearing for John Bolton to become U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations is set to begin on Monday. While such nominations normally sail through Congress, Bolton's fate remains in limbo. All the Democrats on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee have announced their opposition to the nomination, and one Republican who could tip the balance has yet to commit either way. There are fresh allegations that Bolton improperly circumvented State Department rules to gain access to sensitive intelligence reports and that Bolton has sought to remove dissenters on intelligence matters from their posts. In Washington, Mitch Jezerich takes a look at John Bolton.
Here's John Bolton last month when he accepted George Bush's nomination to become the next U.S. ambassador to the U.N.
Madam Secretary, my record over many years demonstrates clear support for effective multilateral diplomacy.
And here's John Bolton 10 years ago giving a speech in New York.
I'm sorry. The United States makes the UN work when it wants it to work. Mm-hmm. And that is exactly the way it should be, because the only question for the United States is what's in our national interest. And if you don't like that, I'm sorry, but that is the fact.
John Bolton has rejected such international treaties as the International Criminal Court and has generally called UN resolutions mind-numbing. As Undersecretary for Arms Control with the Bush administration, Bolton has indicated support for some international agreements, such as a treaty on the nonproliferation of nuclear weapons and the Chemical and Biological Weapons Convention. However, he was also influential in the dismantling of the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty. Bolton is also a critic of the UN for being inefficient and unable to operate without U.S. leadership. Tom Berry is policy director of the International Relations Center and author of the recent article on John Bolton called The UN Basher as UN Ambassador. With John Danforth and John Negroponte serving as the previous two ambassadors to the UN, Free Speech Radio News asked Berry whether the nomination of Bolton marked a dramatic shift.
Yes, indeed. John Bolton, unlike Negroponte, who is used to dealing with the international community and successfully dealing with the international community as a diplomat, John Bolton has a much more confrontational posture, and that's how he gets things done. Indeed, as Condoleezza Rice said, he is a man that gets things done, but he does it by being very aggressive and very astute. John Bolton is not a clown, as some portray him. He knows international law well. He knows the United Nations well.
John Bolton's nomination hearing in the Senate Foreign Affairs Committee is set for Monday. Mitch Jezerich, Free Speech Radio News.
According to the Pentagon, a CBS News freelancer who was shot in the hip by U.S. troops on Wednesday is being held in prison as a suspected insurgent. Meanwhile, a journalist with the Arab language satellite Al Arabiya network continues to be held in prison. Aaron Glantz reports from Washington.
The Pentagon's revelation that they're holding a CBS cameraman as an insurgent comes as a surprise to observers. Initially, U.S. soldiers said they shot the cameraman because they mistook his video camera for a gun. Lucie Maron represents the French organization Reporters Without Borders in Washington.
We just want soldiers to pay more attention, to be more careful. I mean, you don't have only in a war zone, you don't have only people fighting, you also have civilians, you also have journalists covering this, and you have to be careful, you have to pay more attention.
Lucie Maron says the incident is similar to another one a year ago as well, where a U.S. soldier shot and killed award-winning Reuters cameraman Mazen Dana as he filmed the families of those detained outside Abu Ghraib prison.
He was just taking pictures, and a soldier saw him, apparently thought he was having a weapon, panicked, and shot at him. And the U.S. Army claimed that this U.S. soldier involved had only followed the rules of engagement, and that's it. They completely cleared any soldiers from any blunders.
Meantime, Iraqi police continue to imprison a different reporter with the satellite news channel Al Arabiya. The network's Washington bureau chief, Talal al-Hajj, says correspondent Wael Issam was stopped at Baghdad International Airport March 28th. His tapes were confiscated and he was taken to prison.
The station managers and his mother are pleading to the Iraqi government to release him because they haven't charged him with anything. And they have contacted also the foreign minister of Iraq, Bashir Zubari, to act on this.
Arabiya's assignment editor Najib Ben Shahab says before his arrest, Issam had been working on a documentary on the Iraqi city of Fallujah, where resistance to the occupation is strong and where U.S. military assaults have killed hundreds, if not thousands, of civilians.
Wael went to Al-Fallujah many times and he filmed a lot of stuff there. And he had so many footage with armed groups and all these so-called resistance, and he was bringing the material to Dubai to work on a small documentary or a piece about Fallujah and the armed groups there.
Today also marks the two-year anniversary of the U.S. military's entrance into Baghdad. That same day, April 8, 2003, U.S. troops fired a tank shell at the Palestine Hotel, killing two journalists there. That attack took center stage in front of the White House today. There, the brother of one of the journalists, Spanish TV reporter Jose Cuso, told reporters he is still seeking justice.
No, no hay ninguna investigación porque el...
There was never an investigation, Javier Cuso told reporters. The United States just pardoned everyone. So we're trying to get an independent investigation. It would be a legal process, he said. Eight journalists have been killed by U.S. troops in Iraq since the occupation began. No American soldier has ever been punished. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Aaron Glantz in Washington.
John Negroponte is making the transition from U.S. ambassador to Iraq to the newly created position of National Intelligence Director. Replacing him in Baghdad will be Afghan-born Zalmay Khalilzad, currently serving as U.S. ambassador to Afghanistan. KPFK Sonali Kolhatkar reports on Khalilzad's tenure in Afghanistan.
As U.S. Special Envoy to Afghanistan, Zalmay Khalilzad played the crucial role of enforcing U.S. interests in the war-weary Central Asian nation as it transitioned from a post-Taliban government to an elected presidency. The highest-ranking Muslim American in Bush's cabinet, Khalilzad first visited the U.S. as a teenager through an exchange program sponsored by the Quaker organization American Friends Service Committee. After becoming a citizen, he played a crucial role in the 1980s, urging the U.S. government to support the fundamentalist anti-Soviet Mujahideen and provide them with shoulder-fired Stinger missiles and other arms. Khalilzad's legacy in Afghanistan also includes ensuring that Afghanistan's armed warlords, many of them former Mujahideen warriors, become entrenched into Afghan politics. He recently called Hamid Karzai's appointment of warlords to the cabinet a wise decision. Qasimi is an elected delegate from the remote Farah province to the recent Loya Jirga councils. He says that Khalilzad's idea of peace is to support criminal warlords.
Zulmi Khalilzad wants to just to bring peace in his point of view, but he supports some warlords, but mostly support Karzai, all to some warlord people and criminal people, because he thinks that if we don't support them in Afghanistan, security, it is not right from my point of view.
Qasimi's views on the U.S.-backed warlords are echoed by the vast majority of Afghans. Habiba Sarabi is the former Minister of Women's Affairs and Afghanistan's first female provincial governor. Sarabi says she's frustrated by Khalilzad's role in propping up the warlords and suspects that the U.S. is making deals with them.
The time that I wanted to talk with Khalilzad, and I did it several times, I told him that please stop the warlordism in Afghanistan. Of course, you have to take care about the warlordism, but honestly, not to keep them for the future. I think Bush administration and Mr. Khalilzad they are dealing with these warlords and the fundamentalist groups.
Formerly a senior analyst at the RAND Corporation, Khalilzad also headed the Bush-Cheney transition team for the Department of Defense and has been a counselor to Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld. He served in the State and Defense Departments of the Reagan and Bush senior administrations. Significantly, Khalilzad was also a founding member of the right-wing neoconservative think tank Project for a New American Century. In the 1990s, as an employee of Cambridge Energy Research Associates, Khalilzad conducted risk analyses for Unocal Oil Corporation at the time that Unocal was engaging the Taliban on the construction of an oil and gas pipeline through Afghanistan. In the past 3 years, one of his major accomplishments in Afghanistan was to ensure that the U.S. favorite, Hamid Karzai, not the popular former King Zahir Shah, was elected as interim president in the emergency Loya Jirga of 2002. He is a close advisor to Karzai and, according to the New York Times, has, quote, created an alternate seat of power in Kabul to, quote, ensure that the elements friendly to America gain ascendancy in a democratic Afghanistan. Habiba Sarabi disapproves of Khalilzad and what she calls his negative influence on Karzai.
Sometimes he wants to show the people that he is more powerful than President Karzai, because he is speaking strongly. I wish not be like this.
Khalilzad's role in empowering warlords and grooming a weak U.S. puppet in Afghanistan has seriously impacted the quality of Afghanistan's democracy. It will remain to be seen what he has in store for Iraq. From KPFK in Los Angeles, I'm Sonali Kolhatkar.
At the end of a 9-hour session, Mexico's Congress voted 360 to 127 to remove the mayor of Mexico's immunity from prosecution so that he can be prosecuted for allegedly violating a judicial order to cancel the construction of a hospital access road. This could effectively eliminate the most popular candidate from next year's presidential election. Shannon Young reports from Oaxaca City.
Over 150,000 people crowded into and around Mexico City's main plaza yesterday morning to hear from the mayor, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, prior to his appearance before a congressional session that would decide his political fate.
El fondo no es una supuesta desobediencia a un juez.
Deep down, it's not about an alleged disobedience of a judge for trying to open a roadway to a hospital. Obviously, that's not why they want to remove my immunity from prosecution. Something else is behind it, and it's public knowledge. They want to push me aside so that my name won't appear on the electoral ballots in 2006.
But his popularity among the electorate could not prevent what happened yesterday in Congress. By a margin of nearly 3-1, federal legislators approved the so-called desafuero process that strips López Obrador's immunity, thereby allowing for criminal prosecution, removal from his mayoral position, and the likely exclusion from the presidential race. Although the gathering in Mexico City was the largest show of support for López Obrador, demonstrations were held throughout the country yesterday. Gregorio Hernandez explains that although the residents of Mexico City will be the most immediately affected by yesterday's congressional decision, he attended a rally in Oaxaca City due to the extent of the potential consequences.
Como se vienen las elecciones presidenciales.
Since the presidential elections are coming up in 2006, this is a political situation that has repercussions all over the country. Besides, it's our duty as citizens of Mexico to participate in this situation.
A popular sentiment among those opposed to the desafuero process is that the charges against Andrés Manuel López Obrador pale in comparison to the unpunished crimes of some of Mexico's more notoriously corrupt and violent public officials. Rosa María Sánchez is a housewife that was also in attendance at yesterday's rally in Oaxaca City.
Me extraña que no estén castigados muchos personajes.
To me, it's strange that people that have killed, that have stolen, that have looted the nation go unpunished. Look, compañeros, I'm not a professional type, but I realize what's happening to us in this country.
Although López Obrador has earned an 80% approval rating as Mexico City's mayor, yesterday's congressional decision can remove him immediately from his mayoral position. Mexico City's Legislative Assembly now appears poised to fight a legal battle with the federal branch to prevent López Obrador's immediate removal from office. An abrupt change of powers in the hemisphere's largest city has caused a number of both governmental and non-governmental analysts to question the social and economic stability of Mexico in the coming months. For FSRN, this is Shannon Young with Vladimir Flores in Oaxaca.
A brutal massacre of 8 people in northwestern Colombia has sparked a national debate and international uproar and could even affect U.S. military aid to the country. The victims of the February 21 and 22 massacres were members of a peace community, which in 1997 declared its neutrality to the 41-year-old armed conflict by prohibiting the guerrilla and paramilitary fighters as well as the armed forces from entering their villages. The peace community of San José de Apartado says the army and paramilitaries committed this recent massacre. Meanwhile, the Colombian government says the victims were involved with the country's largest rebel group, the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, or FARC, and blames the FARC for the killings. From San José de Apartado, Nicole Carson has more.
Vamos todos adelante, con cariño y mucho amor.
As the anthem of San José de Apartado says, we all work together in the defense of life, justice, and peace. As campesinos, we work to strengthen the peace community. However, in response to a massacre of 8 people from the community, President Álvaro Uribe has ordered the presence of public forces on their land. Leader Wilson David sits beside a monument of more than 150 rocks with names of assassinated peace community members painted on them.
Del 21 del mes pasado.
On February 21st, the army killed people, beheading them, like the guerrilla has done in the past. What's clear is here the paramilitary and the military have entered and committed massacres and burnt homes. The guerrilla also have a presence in this region, but the government's duty is to fight them and to respect the civilian population.
Despite protection measures issued by the Costa Rica-based Inter-American Human Rights Court, the community says the army and the paramilitary groups have killed 138 peace community members, with the FARC killing another 20. While impunity shrouds almost all of these cases, according to the Attorney General's office, 2 paramilitaries were captured and sentenced for murder. Fellowship of Reconciliation volunteer Patricia Abbott accompanied 110 peasants to find the sites where the 8 villagers had been massacred in February. They searched until they found the bloody footprints of a 6-year-old and a shallow grave nearby.
We sat and watched the exhumation, and we watched them pull out the disemboweled torso of 2 adults with, like, so, like, you know, their head chopped off, their arms and their legs chopped off, and their bowels, like, hanging out, and 2 adults. Then they pulled out the whole body of a child who was, like, 6-year-old Natalia. And while they were doing this, there was family members sat there, and the soldiers were laughing when they were pulling out the bodies in front of these family members.
On March 1st, the defense ministry said no army troops were closer than 2 days' distance from the sites of the massacres when they occurred. However, a photojournalist and residents who live near the grave sites say the army was in that region at the time of the massacre. Witnesses say the army detained several families in their homes on February 21st, the same day peace community leader Luis Eduardo Guerra and his family were killed nearby. The families were held hostage by the army for a week until a civilian search party helped them escape. Meanwhile, nearly $40 million in U.S. military aid to Colombia is on hold pending U.S. certification. According to D.C.-based Center for International Policy's senior analyst Adam Isaacson, certification of aid will depend on the massacre investigation.
Military, is still being widely accused. I mean, if this isn't clarified when it's time to make the certification decision, and if there's a reasonable, reason to believe that there's some stonewalling going on and not cooperating with the authorities or the investigating authorities, which is one of the things they're supposed to certify that they're doing, then there's really no politically viable way that they can certify.
On March 31st, the police arrived with a carnival bus full of clowns giving out candy. Community members packed their belongings and abandoned their homes. Some 300 people relocated to a settlement of makeshift shelters, newly baptized San Josecito, a place of dignity. A few days after police occupation began, the peace community said, "Our desire is to keep our principles intact, but we do not know how long we will be able to resist." From San Jose de Apartado, I'm Nicole Carson for Free Speech Radio News.
Conservatives in the heartland have been under pastry attacks. Project for a New American Century's Bill Kristol was pied at Earlham College on March 29. Patrick Buchanan was drenched in salad dressing at Western Michigan University on March 30. And David Horowitz was hit on April 5 at Butler University. Joining us to talk about the recent pyings is Agent Apple of the Biotic Baking Brigade. How did this concept of pying first come about?
Well, it was originally a staple feature of silent film, and I think in the 1960s it really took off as a political act with groups such as Abby Hoffman and the Yippies and Aaron Kay, the Pie Man from New York, who took on a whole host of prominent politicians, business people, and various types of leaders, and it became kind of a visual Esperanto, the pie in the face. It really was clear to everyone what was going on.
And recently you have pied pretty prominent right-wing conservatives. Can you talk about these three latest pyings?
Sure. A group in Indiana known as the Indiana Pastry Partisans, they were the ones who took on William Kristol. They sent out a communique that explained their actions was based on his role in founding the Project for a New American Century, which, of course, is the famous neoconservative think tank. William Kristol is a war hawk that we have in large part to thank for our current adventures in Iraq, Afghanistan, and elsewhere. Likewise, David Horowitz is a former radical turned arch-conservative who likewise has similar policies on the war abroad. Considers, for instance, all Palestinians and the Palestinian Authority as terrorists, believes in regime change in now Iran and Syria, as well as North Korea. So I think there's a clear thread in both of those attacks in Indiana. Now, Pat Buchanan, I think, is a more interesting target because he's not a neoconservative. He is a conservative, kind of old school. The person who drenched him with salad dressing shouted "Stop the Bigotry," which is in response to Pat Buchanan's stance on shutting down the border to immigrants from Latin America. I think if you the thread that goes through all three of these attacks in America's heartland is we have an American foreign policy based on bigotry. And so I think for young Americans to reject that and present their just desserts to these speakers is a great, great action.
Agent Apple works with the Biotic Baking Brigade. He joined us from an undisclosed location in the mountains of the California Northwest. For more information, you can log on to bioticbakingbrigade.org. You've been listening to Free Speech Radio News. I'm Aura Bogado.